Oh, we lost him already. Welcome in. Latest episode of that SEC podcast, joined by a damn ghost here.
Hold on.
How's everybody doing in here?
Needs a more slimming shirt.
Okay.
What's nope. up? Still fat. Damn.
Nothing's
really
changing.
Thought that would change things for me. Things are good. Not a ton going on.
Slow news day in the cycle, huh?
Yeah, in Baton Rouge, it's kind of been like that a bunch. Am I out of focus? Probably for the best.
Yeah. It's a slimming focus.
Thank God. There it is. That actually right there, that looks... No, there it looks... How are you, Michael?
Oh, I'm doing well, and I can't help, but I gotta ask, what is it like? You just moved to Baton Rouge, right? What is it like living in the utopia of racial society in America?
I mean, I've lived in Columbia, South Carolina. That was fine. I got shot in Atlanta, so that wasn't necessarily a bastion of great. I mean, I got shot by a drive-by in,
So Kiffin was right. This is the best place you've lived.
For me personally, yes. I love Baton Rouge. I love Baton Rouge. I'm trying to like not.
What do you think about Oxford though?
Oxford's beautiful. And I think there's a lot of positive things about Oxford. Like the issue I have with Oxford, and I've always said this, I have one issue with Oxford. It's very, very simple. I'm not paying $100 to $150 to get into a bar ever. So that's the only thing about Oxford I've never really liked, but it's a beautiful, no, I am serious. I did get shot in 2016. Coming on 10 years, big dog, back my arm. But no, so I thought that whole thing yesterday, man, and I know we're going to get into it. It's just like where I'm coming from this whole standpoint is there's no part of me that thinks they're going to cancel that game, nor should they outright cancel it. I think that there needs to be some serious conversations about the safety of everybody involved at the game, from players to coaches to fans. And because listen, like this is SEC football is not for the faint of heart. And we know that, right? There's a lot of storylines that we've seen for years and years and years in past games and past rivalries. Hell, dude, they canceled the Bama-Auburn rivalry for decades. And they part of the reason was because of like a power play in Congress in the early 1900s, but it was also because there were so many stabbings and beatings after the games. And like, so like this whole thing, the temperature in the room needs to be turned down a ton. And it hasn't been turned down a lot at any point this offseason. And I don't think that that's because Ole Miss is necessarily fanning the flames. I think their fans are outraged and angry and really, really mad still. And I get that, but it's like, it's just one of those things where it's like, I just wish that we could stop. Like, I wish we could just stop doing this in the off season because it's just been so much. And it's been, I think like we've passed the point of where it's like a fun off season fodder and rivalry. It feels like it's gotten so far past that.
Well, I'm so glad you said that, Chris, because I was going to ask you in the middle of your rant there. I mean, who is responsible for this? It's because, again, you're right. The Ole Miss fans are fans.
Fans are fans.
If Kiffin had just left Tennessee people would be acting like this. If Kiffin just left Auburn fans would be acting like this. But it's no one at all. I've not heard Pete Golding or Keith Carter or anybody reference Lane Kiffin or September 19th. It seems to be a one-sided. It's almost like you break up with a girl. And then you can't stop talking about her to your new girlfriend. Like this seems to be all one-sided here.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of fair. I think we encompass everything into like one, I hate when I see on Twitter, it's like when you see like a fan have the reaction of like, oh, I was told Steph Curry couldn't shoot. And it's like, who told you that? There's idiots everywhere. It feels like we talk about Ole Miss at times in a way that like, well, they're mad, but it's like, yeah, well, their fans are mad. And at LSU, their fans are reacting online to stuff like this, but it does seem like it's more so if it's between the two head coaches. I don't see Pete Golding saying stuff like that. I think that part is a little bit more one-sided. And I think it's also partially because, you know, I think this, the Kiffin, as much as I think as he's grown as a person, I think he's also still Lane Kiffin, and he is doing what Lane Kiffin does, which is, it's kind of that whole thing where it's like, you got one pitch. I mean, like, you're, and that is like, he hasn't lost his fastball. That the fastball is to troll other fan bases and make jokes about it and stuff like that. And it's, so I think that part of me is like, are we surprised? Because I think this is kind of what Lane Kiffin's done throughout most of his career. And I do think that behind closed doors, I do think what Pete Golding said is accurate, that him and Pete are probably friends, and they don't, but like, I think that that some of the stuff that's come out is just so unnecessary that you're like, what are we doing at this point? And I don't, it's like, I look at it and I say, if somebody had followed me around for questions for 4 hours, I can't fucking imagine what I would say. I can't imagine the things that would come out of my mouth. So I get where he's coming from partially from that, but also I'm not paid $13 million to be the head coach of anything. And I guarantee you, Mike, if I was, it would probably not be very long before I said something that made sure I wasn't in charge of that anymore. That, not saying that he should, but you know what I mean? It's just like, it's very frustrating, because it's like, I talk a lot about on either my show or when I write about just the happenings of college football. It's like, the adults in the room need to do something from the NCAA level, from like SEC level. Like, the adults in the room need to figure out how to fix the sport. And I think right now what we kind of have is a lack of adults in the room of saying like, hey, here's some things that just don't need to be brought up, that are, whether you believe them to be true or not, whether that story happened or not, they're just incendiary and inflammatory in nature. And it's, there's so much less to gain from saying that than there is to by not saying it. You know what I mean? And so I think that part is like, I'm very frustrated as an SEC fan that we're here, because I just, that game's going to be awesome for so many reasons. It's going to be awesome. And now I firmly do believe, just in my own personal opinion, that we've gotten to the point where it's like, I'm concerned about the people going to that game. I'm genuinely concerned about the people going to that game. What's up, Strohs? And so it's just frustrating me, because it's like, we've lost sight of two schools that are like, they are rivals, but this used to be fun. The Magnolia Bowl was fun. And now it's like, I mean, I live in Baton Rouge. I'm familiar with LSU fans. I'm very familiar with LSU fans. I'm familiar with LSU fans from before I lived here, and like coming here as an opposing fan. And it's so, putting those two people are in the same kind of little combustible area. It's just, it worries me for the people going. And I think the thing I keep going back to, Mike, God damn it, this is a really long-winded answer, where I don't even know if I've said anything of substance, because I'm trying to so hard to like walk on eggshells here. But I think the thing that worries me the most about that game, and this is not, I'm not saying this in any way saying Ole Miss fans better not do this, and they're the ones that I'm worried about. I'm worried about all sides of it. But based off the track record of what I saw at Tennessee in 2021,
remember? I was there.
With that, Cousin was 12 Shane. Years after he left. 12 years. This is less than 10 months. Like, and so that part, I'm like, fuck, that is concerning. That is concerning. And then the basket weaving comment, like, what did Ole Miss do to everybody? That if I'm Pete Golding, it's like the what's the meme of either the 50 Cent meme or the one of the guy, son of a boy dad, little Sasquatch meme, where it's like, what did I do? Like, we're just over here. Ole Miss has done a really good job this entire offseason, in an offseason where they don't have to. They have done a really good job this offseason of minding their business and staying in their lane and doing whatever they like to focus on football. And I don't mean their fans. I mean the program itself, because the fans aren't going to go out there and play the games. They have done a really good job of staying in their lane, minding their business, and going about their day-to-day work of focusing on football and focusing on Ole Miss. That has not been the case for everyone else.
Well, I think others feel a little bit threatened, in my opinion. Chris, is the third winningest program in the conference since 21. You know, Ole Miss on the rise. Can they keep that up without Lane Kiffin? I mean, that's a million-dollar question right there. But to see Sark calling them out, I mean, that's little old. Can you imagine little old Texas complaining about competitive advantage after playing in the Pee Wee leagues for the last 50 years?
Dude. with what they have in their backyard. I mean, Sark is, he's not wrong about like the lack of prioritizing academics and collegiate athletics. Like that's a fair statement. You and I have talked about that where it's like, yeah, I mean, like let me just watch this. You ready? Hey, as somebody that is around college athletics, I'm a little bit concerned that we've really lost focus on the prioritizing of academics in college athletics. End of sentence. Do you see how different that was than me saying, hey guys, a little bit concerned about the academic process here and for a lot of collegiate programs and college athletics in general. I mean, Jesus, have you seen what fucking Auburn's doing over here? Underwater bad. And he used like the, I always say this to you, I get more offended by bad jokes than anything else. And the underwater basket weaving thing is so fucking stupid. It makes me, that part made me cringe because first off, if you're fucking held your breath underwater in general, not super easy. Not super easy for anybody. And now you're talking about basket weaving. Do you have goggles? Are we wearing a pair of Speedos over our eyes so we can actually see what we're weaving? Basket weaving also seems pretty fucking tough. So I just, you know, I think we should get some new jokes. We need to freshen those up a little bit. And I don't love it.
Oh, buddy. And then have you seen Lane Kiffin today? Now, no. I have to be clear. I didn't go out and read it, but it was so I need to go back and read it and verify everything. But it
just react to it.
It was relayed to me by a reliable person that he did apologize.
Yeah.
But I believe he also said, well, we don't got to worry too much because Ole Miss Stadium doesn't hold 100,000 like Tennessee. So
I swear to God if he said that.
They can't get up quite like these others. So, I mean, my God, you know, how idiotic of a response can you have?
I haven't seen that. I haven't seen him say that. If he did, now we're going back to the whole meme thing. I just think of the Popeyes employee that's just like that is, I don't know how you're supposed to respond to that. And I did see that he apologized. I saw that part where he was like, I don't mean to offend anybody, but it's also like, you know, you did though. I mean, like you did. And so, you know, there was a line in that Vanity Fair piece, and I'm interested to see what Strohs has to say about this, Hottie Tottie Strohs, because I know that she's an Ole Miss fan, but I also know she's like a pretty reasonable person. And I thought there was a line in there that stood up the most to me, which was, and it was some, I'm paraphrasing here, which is dangerous, but it was something along the lines of like, with Kiffin, you don't know if you're getting this transparent, honest reaction that's beyond coach speak and genuinely responding to the question you're asking. Cause there's times when he does that, or if it's total fucking bullshit. And it's like, and I think Feinbaum was like quoted in the article too. It was like, you just never know. That's one of the reasons why it's so fascinating, because it's like, is it a complete fabrication, or is it like something that is, he's saying that he truly does mean, or is it something in between where it's like, he's saying these honest things and saying these transparent things, but is it used as a vessel to then be able to like later on down the line say other things that he can get away with? And I there's been so many times that I have said stuff that I have put my foot in my mouth and I shouldn't have said. And like, but there's, it's at some point you have to just like, the easiest way to stop offending somebody when you're talking, just stop talking. And so I think
you got that sign up there.
Yeah, be quiet. Look, I moved in the right spot too. So, I mean, it's just like a pyromaniac of words is a really good way to put it. My lady says size don't matter. Ole Miss crowd is plenty. I didn't see that he said the thing about the audience or the crowd and the size of Vaught Hemingway. I know I've made jokes about the size of Vaught Hemingway before. But I also just think it like, Surely he didn't say that the day after. it does worry me though, because like, I think that one of the ways that you can look at this, and again, I think that Ole Miss has done a really good job this offseason. You have to give Pete Golding credit, which is like, he could have been the loudest one in the room saying all this stuff and responding to what he's saying. And God knows, I'm sure there's a part of it that wants to. He's a human. Like there's only so many times you can bite your lip on something and maybe bite your tongue. Bite your lip is probably more erotic. Probably shouldn't use that phrase.
Not with him.
Maybe he just want to bite his lip. You never know. Lane looked pretty good in that fucking Paul Walker cosplay they had him dress up in with the white tee and jeans. I do think that at some point I wish that they would stop talking and just like focus on football. But my God, how, I mean, can you think of like, 2010 Iron Bowl, I was at that game. That was insane with the Cam Newton thing. 2008 LSU Bama when Saban came back. People around here speak about that game like it's, you know, one of the craziest of all time. I mean, Tennessee Ole Miss in 2021, I think that's a big one as well. I mean, like, I don't know many of these games that have more like insane offseason like hype machines that have been this intense and passionate, or whatever fucking word you want to use for it. But at this point also, I think that it's gotten to a point where I do worry about like the safety of people going to that game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's a long list, little teaser for tonight. That's kind of what I'm going to be working on, but you could go back to Fulmer, you know, Alabama, that whole saga. You mentioned Saban, LSU, Bama. That was a great one. Tommy Tuberville going from Ole Miss to Auburn, Houston Nutt, yeah. Arkansas, Ole Miss, Coach O getting fired at Ole Miss, back to LSU.
I don't think anybody at – I don't know if anybody at Ole Miss was super upset with him coming back. I think they were probably okay. They were probably very confused as to what the fuck was happening at LSU that he was doing so well after he was there, but I don't think they were mad that he left.
Well, again, this is a working list, right?
Dan, I like it, though. It's a good idea.
Dan Mullen, Hugh Freeze. I mean, Dan Mullen literally turned in Ole Miss and Hugh Freeze. That thing got ugly as hell.
Yeah.
There's a lot of examples, but I can't wait to dive into that. But,
You know, and this is a really good point, I think, from Ole Miss. And this is the thing that keeps getting lost. And I think that there's two types of responses, and there's probably more, but there's two consistent responses I see from Ole Miss fans about this whole thing, which is fuck you type of response. Like, don't you dare talk about our school, which I think we all have been there at some point hell, me and you didn't even like each other for like 3 years. I definitely didn't like you because of what you would say about my favorite team at the time. And then what I mean, it's also you would say stuff that was like non-threatening or non-controversial. And I'd be like, no, fuck you, Mike. And you'd be like, I was just saying you guys are a really good team this year. I was like, oh, all right. Well, my bad. But I think that the response that Ole Miss fans are giving to the Kiffin stuff and LSU stuff, which is like, dude, screw you for talking bad about Oxford. I mean, first, because Oxford is beautiful. It's one of the most incredible scenic places in the country in general, not just college campuses. It's absolutely gorgeous. And the town itself is like, it's so small that it's like the people that live there do take a lot of great pride in it, just like a lot of places around the South, because I mean, hell, we get pointed out and made fun of enough from fucking people outside of this region that think that they're backwards or backwards. And I don't mean just Mississippi. I mean the entire Southeast. So it's like, I get that gut feeling and like knee jerk reaction to be like, dude, we can make fun of ourselves. You don't get to talk about us. But the other one also that I've seen from Ole Miss fans is like, is this very puzzled why? Like we were so good to you. And if you wanted to leave and you just wanted to say it's because the program at LSU is better, in my opinion, the money is, you know, like the deeper pockets are going to pay me more. I'll have more resources. Nick Saban told me it was a great idea. Now I'm out of focus again. Nick Saban told me it's a great idea. Like all of these things are fine answers. You might not agree with them, but they're fine and way less egregiously offensive than what has also been said. And I think that Ole Miss fans are kind of looking at this like, dude, like we took you in, you were kind of a pariah and people did not want to hitch their wagon to you at all. And then all of a sudden it's like now like you're shit talking us. Like you already left us. And for what everyone else is telling us outside of Oxford, for like the prettier girl in the room, why are we still in your mouth? Like why are you still feeling the need to come after us? And I think that is the part where they're like kind of frustrated, because it's like, man, like I always bring this up with Kiffin. 15 years ago, he was the most hated person in the SEC universally. But I mean, like Urban Meyer had left Florida, like he was gone. Nick Saban, of course, maybe because of winning, but like off-field antics when he was at Tennessee, even when he went to Southern Cal, SEC fans rejoiced and celebrated when he got fired on the tarmac. When he came back to Bama, I remember saying specifically in an article I wrote, like it felt like if you're a Bama fan, like that dickhead general in the movie The Patriot, if he would have switched sides in the middle of the movie, I would be like, I don't know how to cheer for this guy. What the fuck is this? Like that's almost what it felt like. And then to have the 180 that he had, and part of that is because of the generosity and like the PR job and just the environment that Oxford created for him. And then to have it go to this, now it's like, man, that I don't know how it could have been an amicable breakup. I do think it could have been far more civil than what it has been.
Yeah, and I think this is just not an intelligent take. Shout out King Ween here. Last I checked, Kiffin helped Ole Miss more than Ole Miss helped him. I mean, let's not negate what Kiffin did for Ole Miss, but again, back to what you just said. I mean, this guy was universally hated.
Yeah.
He couldn't get a job to save his life. I mean, they were, when he was at Alabama, has Alabama ever been better?
Yeah. No.
No. When he was OC, right? Well, basically, oh, yeah. But 2020 doesn't.
That's, him and Kirby. Like, that's crazy. Right.
But Kirby, what did Kirby get? Kirby got the Georgia job.
Yeah.
Kiffin, he was going to LSU to be the offensive coordinator. He could not get a damn job.
Right.
Saban helped him to get FAU. I mean, that's where that guy was at.
Yeah.
And again, I know Arkansas was interested in him as well, but they gave him everything he wanted. And even 2 years ago, Chris,
yeah,
he was desperate, or maybe even longer ago, when the Florida job opened, he would have went. They didn't consider his ass. Scott Strickland would not consider him. When Strickland,
incredible AD, tons of good hires there. He's killing it.
When LSU opened up, when they went after Brian Kelly, he wanted that job. They didn't even consider him.
Yeah.
When Alabama opened up, that was not even that long ago, he was desperate to get that job.
Yeah.
They would not even consider his ass. So
yeah, I think the thing about Bama too was like the decision makers there, from what I was told, was it was something a little bit more similar. Like, yeah, maybe on down the line, but he can't be the first guy. He cannot be the first guy after Saban. Because there was too much stuff attached to, I mean, just too much mud on his name.
Right.
And I think, I mean, yeah, you're right. So I think I don't say it's the worst part, because like this doesn't affect me. I'm not an Ole Miss fan and I'm not an LSU fan, and I cover the entire conference and I live in Baton Rouge. So it's like, I feel like it's easier to sit here and look at it through the lens of like, well, I don't know why Ole Miss fans are being so crazy, but at the same way, it's like, okay, well, they're kind of being gaslit at times, where it's like, I do think they should be less crazy. I also think that like, hey man, like, if I'm in the middle of telling this group, like, why don't you guys calm down? Why don't you guys leave? Why don't you, like, and you're like, yeah, bitch. And you're like, whoa. No, he can't say that. Like, that's like, I think that part is been frustrating to watch. And then I think that the biggest thing for me that I think is going to be very interesting to watch in this upcoming season and the next couple seasons is the growth that we were all so excited about and really kind of proud of Lane Kiffin for having with like the yoga stuff. And like, I hope that wasn't a facade, because he does seem like he has really learned a lot of lessons. But I also know just from human behavior and how I have been at times in the past, where it's like, it feels so great to have turned a corner. But when you turned a corner and then it doesn't get the reaction that you're kind of seeking, it is also very easy to lean back into your old ways. And I think that we're seeing some of that to an extent, where it's like, this is what he's most familiar with, because I don't mean this in a negative way to Lane Kiffin. I just mean this in like a human nature standpoint. Like, if I have behaved a certain way for 20 years, and then in the last five, I've changed for the better, I'm probably still more familiar with what I was for the previous 20 years. That doesn't mean he's going to go back to being like, you know, in all of these like vices or anything crazy like that. But it's just like, yeah, of course, like in just the grand scheme of things, like you're probably more familiar with that and used to defaulting to some of that. And so I hope that we really just, I just wish they would both fucking move on. And I hope that he has great success at LSU, and I really think he will. And I also hope that we can also enjoy Pete Golding's first year and his tenure there with one of the most exciting fucking players in the country and one of the best stories in college football. Cause that's the other part too, where it's like, I hate to be dramatic about it, but I'm dramatic in general, as everyone knows. And what we have in Trinidad and Chambliss, like, stories like that are so good for this sport. And it's all being overshadowed. Even the Vanity Fair piece. They talked to him in the Vanity Fair. Now Kiffin's in Vanity Fair. It's like, I wish that we didn't overshadow some of the positives with all this fucking negative. But that is what moves the needle for a lot of things.
Yeah, isn't it interesting how, to his credit, right, that you just kind of pointed out where he's sober. and he seems centered. He's doing, you know, the morning yoga, all that. He's posting Bible verses.
Yeah.
Like he's, it seems like he is living his best life physically and spiritually and probably with his family too. I mean, I don't know much about his family, but it certainly seems that way. And then yet unhinged mentally still, like, how can we have it both ways? You would think when you center yourself and you get better physically, the mental part would come with it. But I guess we still got a ways to go there.
Yeah, I mean, and again, like I'm not trying to sit here and come to his defense by any means, because he's a grown ass man that knows better and like all that kind of stuff. And I think that like I said this morning in that article, there's both pieces, or there's both sides are to like have some blame in it. But it's also, I'm not here to sit here and say, all right, well, who is more to blame, or who is it? Like, I just want it to stop. At some point, you got to stop having the conversation of like, well, who do you think won in round fucking 38 of Lane Kiffin versus Ole Miss fans? It's like, let's just move on. Because there really is. What sucks about shit like this is it does overshadow the actual players and those storylines and the stuff about the sport that like again I hate to be dramatic about it, but like one of the parts that sucks the most about this is the Trinidad Chambliss thing, regardless of the ridiculous court case, that is a story that is so good for college football in a day and age of college football where it's like there's like all these players that are just in it for money. They're just trying to figure out how many places they can transfer to and make a quick, you know, like get the bag for 1 year and go be these like, you know, 12-month mercenaries at different places and all that kind of stuff. This is a kid that played Division II football that was overlooked, was added late to the season or in the offseason, didn't get on campus until June. You know, he's making 10 times. He bought a fucking house the other day. Like, and then on top of all that, oh, by the way, this undersized, super likable quarterback that took his team way beyond what any of us thought he would do in the postseason. I want us to talk about that kind of stuff. Like, I want us to talk about those stories because, like, you know, that's something we should feel almost like. I honestly thought going into the offseason or like a little bit last year, a 5'10 quarterback named Trinidad who came from a Division II school that was overlooked by everybody, that shit should have been Tim Tebow part two of like, oh my God, he's going to be everyone's favorite player, the undersized kid that was able to overcome all this, and we're going to wonder why he dropped in the NFL draft and he's done so much in his community. Like that should have been the thing we talked about ad nauseum this offseason, not all this stupid shit.
Did you also see, I believe it was with the On Three piece he did, again, his response, where apparently he said, you know, you'll really start to see the effects of being at LSU year two, year three. I mean, this is a theme now, right? This is literally months of, basically, he's pointing towards this year may not be the year, but the following years. I mean, how is that going to play in Baton Rouge if, let's say they don't make the playoff and he's like, buddy, year two, year three, watch out. How's that going to play?
I'm not going to sit here and try to project where LSU is going to be in the next 2 to 3 years, because I think it's hard to do that in general because of,
well,
like,
he's doing it.
I know. Yeah. It has to happen in year one. I have been very vocal about this. I know David Chambers seems to have a very, very big issue with most things that I'm saying, for God knows whatever fucking weird ass personal issues he's going through, and then just putting out onto the YouTube channel in front of everyone to see. My God, buddy, therapy. I know we donate memberships on here. I will fucking pay for your first session to go to therapy, you fucking weirdo. Anyway, so this whole thing with year two and year three, I don't even know if it's true, because the amount of money they gave him in year one on the to build this roster. I mean, I don't know if you saw the other day, there was one of the sites put out this thing that was like roster valuations for like the top five in the country. I think they were fourth, which is kind of surprising. Just the valuation, not what they paid for, because they paid more than anyone. But it was around $42 million. And I don't know of a time that you're going to have Whit Weeks, Tre'Davious Green, five stars like DJ Pickett, Lamar Brown, Richard Anderson, all that kind of stuff that you brought in from your recruiting classes and retention on top of Jordan Seaton. Because by all means, Jordan Seaton's probably not going to be there next year, right? I mean, like he's going to be in the pros. Sam Levitt, if things go well, will most likely also be in the pros. So it's like – I don't think that you're able to look at stuff at this in this the way this roster is built in a, oh man, but down the road they're going to be much better. I think with Bama, I've said this in the offseason, it's like you kind of look at DeBoer's success before they gave him that fucking extension, that it would be 2 years instead of a lens through 1 year because you only have seven seniors and you've got a first-year quarterback that's only a sophomore and he has to come back. But the way that this roster is constructed, it's not full of underclassmen. I mean, it's full of a ton of fucking seniors. So it's like but I haven't taken Adderall in like 6 years. But thank you. So I have some unsweetened iced tea over here. And I'm just taking
with vodka in it?
No.
Okay.
But should we? I think that the way that this roster like that goes out of the window. Like if you went and got a freshman quarterback that was like a really highly ranked recruit that was gonna be, you know, like if this was Bryce Underwood coming in, then sure, maybe that's the argument for a couple years down the road. But like, I mean, this roster is constructed to win now. And so I mean, do you think they're going to give him $40 million every year? That doesn't seem obvious. I mean.
Right. And he should know better than anybody. College football now is a total year-to-year proposition.
Yeah.
And that I'm not saying he's going to be fired or anything like that, but you can't count on literally anybody on your roster. This year,
an only child, we can tell. My sister graduated from college today, posted about it on Twitter.
Oh,
by the way, quick shout out. Let me just, I want to give a shout out real quick on this. I know that it has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but also this fucking nonsense. And the, my sister graduated from Washington University, which is one of the top five schools in the country.
Nice.
It is an incredible university, and she got her degree in, she's a PhD, she's a doctor at 27.
Wow.
Molecular microbiology and microbial pathogenesis. Can't even fucking say it. Definitely can't spell it. So shout out to Sarah Beth if you are watching.
Yeah. Good job, Sarah Beth. You're smarter than probably both of us combined.
Yes, for sure. For sure. Anyway, what was the question?
Just the fact that, I mean, you can't count on literally anybody on your roster that's there this year being there next year. That's not to say they won't, but you just can't count on it.
Yeah, I think it's so hard to sit here and say like I mean, I would say the same for Texas probably because it's like,
yeah,
LSU's roster is constructed to win the Waffle House Bowl. That's not even a real bowl, you dumb idiot. No, I mean, I think it's similar to, I would say the same thing for Texas. It's like Texas didn't go out there and spend all that money on, you know, Hollywood Smothers or Smethers. And now I am thinking about Waffle House when I say Smothers and the Waffle House
covered.
Bowl. Honestly, the other kid should change his name to Covered. I mean, the other running back they got from Arizona State, but I mean, you went out and got those guys, you went out and got Cam Coleman, and then you think about the left tackle they have that's a junior, going to be a top 15 pick in the Goolsby, the left tackle they have there, he's going to be a first round pick. Colin Simmons is going to be a first round pick, and then, you know, obviously Arch Manning, I think there's a case to be made that Arch Manning might not go pro because he hasn't done anything ever where he's felt like he needed to rush himself. Now, if he's the number one overall pick and you're, you know, there's nowhere to go but up, I mean, that's one thing. But you saw this year with Dante Moore, who would have been, by all means, the number two overall pick in this draft. He was like, I'm good. I don't need the $49 million or $52 million, whatever it was. I'll just come back to college, make $6 million here, and then I'll go next year and still have all that I'll make in the future. So, but I think that Texas roster is built in a similar way, that they are going to win now. And I don't think you look at them and say like, well, just wait until 2 or 3 years from now. So I didn't read the article. I didn't read the quote that he said. I just think it's kind of a little bit of fool's gold to think a team that spent that much in this offseason is preparing for like the long run. You know what I mean?
Arch Van Wilder Manning, according to you, huh? He's back again.
He's only been there for 4 years. I think this is year four, right?
It is, yeah.
No.
So he could come back, I guess.
Yeah.
Hey, shout out. Well, how about this prediction here? Texas 49, LSU 12.
12. I do want to know how they get to 12. I'd like you to walk me through that a little bit.
God, Tiger Stadium will empty out if that happens. You know what?
Yeah.
Another Texas team comes in there.
Too, by the way, David Chambers makes another incredible point. And this is weirdo behavior, in my opinion. And this is not just him saying it, but the idea that Joe Judge is the difference maker now is beyond me. Because it started with like, it wasn't him, it was Charlie Weiss. And you're like, okay, And then, and that, so now, sure. Let's say that Joe Judge,
NFL head coach, Joe Judge,
former NFL head coach,
get it right.
Disgraced former NFL head coach that is now the quarterback's coach at Ole Miss. He's the difference maker. I know his track record with quarterbacks is electric.
Trinidad.
Lane Kiffin has been mediocre at best at developing quarterbacks. So I could see how that would be something I'd hang my hat on.
I believe he's head coach of offense.
Cool.
I think that's his title down there.
What is John David Baker Rodriguez doing? The kid from ECU. What's his job?
The offensive play caller.
I love that. I want a cool new title at work at my job. Social media head coach.
Head coach. BSing over here. That's what I think. Hey, we had a cousin in here. Apologies, I forgot your name here. It was about an hour ago before Marler started going. But he said Oklahoma's going 12-0. Bookie.
Yeah, that's tough. So this one's tough for me because what a seamless transition. Okay, again, I'm sorry to do this, but the ADD's kicking in because I did not take over 4.5 Adderall today. Uh-huh. Ole Miss has been on fire this entire episode, and that comment is fucking hysterical. A different judge was our difference maker. That's so good. That one wins, brother. So this one's tough for Oklahoma because it's like I told you this a couple weeks ago. I was really high on Tennessee before the spring because I love the combination of what they got with Jim Knowles and then obviously Josh Heupel on offense. But, you know, sometimes it takes a while for Jim Knowles' defense to kind of take shape into what it can be. That's been the track record with him at other stops like Oklahoma State, Ohio State, and Penn State. But I think Tennessee, before we saw how their quarterback situation played out in the spring, was like my kind of like under the radar potential playoff team. Oklahoma has kind of taken over that, but that schedule is tough. I mean, 12-0 is that seems far fetched. I think that they will be 3-0, but I do not think it goes beyond that because of that road game at Georgia. The thing with Oklahoma is it's different than I think than any other team in the SEC, at least it was a season ago, is man, they don't need to score 30 points to win. They just need to probably score 20 because of how good that defense is. But they really struggled to do that at times last year. They really struggled to do that at times. And so I do you need body wash or do, okay. So I think that they'll be better in year two with John Mateer. The growth that I think he'll have in year two as a starter in the SEC, I'm not saying he's going to put up anything close to what he did at Washington State because it's a much more difficult league. But I do think that the defense will be, even though they lost the edge rush position, even though some of the key spots they lost, you return so many key pieces, man. And they're one of the few teams that just did not lose anyone of great significance in the portal. They lost some players to the portal, but nothing of like great significance to where we saw some of these other players. Like Bama losing James Smith to Ohio State, I think is going to be a big deal, right? Like even a guy like Keon Keeley going to Notre Dame, that's kind of a big deal. OU just didn't have that. And I think that OU is going to be really good, but 12-0, man, I don't know if anyone's going to go 12-0 in this league.
Not even your vaunted LSU Tigers?
They're going 87-0.
How about,
I hope they don't go 16-0. And I love Baton Rouge. I just want to clarify that. But the way that the people around here still talk about 2019, I cannot fucking fathom what would happen if they had a team that went 16-0.
Hey, I'm curious if you could give us a cock update. Locked on Cocks.
Yeah.
South Carolina, they're kicking ass in recruiting, right?
They are. What is Allie?
What does that tell you about the future under Shane Beamer that these recruits are locked in? To being locked on Gamecocks.
Locked on Cocks. Pew, 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 pew. Out of focus. Love it. So I love what Beamer's selling right now. God, come on. Does this even do anything? Am I even doing this right?
Looks like you're doing push-ups.
Yeah. It also probably looks like what David Chambers said I was doing earlier. So that's that's tough. Not a good look for me. Anyway, I do love the idea of what Sullivan said from just the standpoint of like how to get like the meter for how good South Carolina is doing. That is pretty funny. They are recruiting really well. I think they have a couple of other recruits that are already in the fold. They just haven't announced yet, like whether they're silent commits or not. But like, you know how they do the whole bat signal thing now, where it's like, you know, Kirby will put out a Go Dogs, or LSU put out a Tiger, or Golding will put out like a Shark, because like the state of Mississippi is very known for sharks, and so it makes sense. And then so South Carolina, they Shane Beamer put out the same tweet, you know, like their little bat signal for recruiting like three times this past week, but only one commitment was actually announced. And by all means, I think that means they still have two other players in the fold. They got another one today, four-star kid out of Pennsylvania. And what South Carolina has done the past couple of years that has been really, really impressive is, I've said this before about the state of South Carolina, it's not anywhere close to a lot of other states in the Southeastern Conference that put out elite high school talent every single year. It just they don't in that state. It's usually between 4 to 6 players in that state that are 4 stars or higher. And it's usually just a couple 4 stars. This year you got a rare occurrence where they do have like some really good elite players and 5 stars like Jaden Bryant. But they have gone into like the DMV area in DC and Maryland and Virginia. They've gone into Pennsylvania, and they've been able to recruit those places really, really well, which are talent rich places that are sometimes not really as much as DMV, but kind of forgotten about in the SEC. And what I think is most important with South Carolina specifically, their recruiting, is they're able to get guys on campus. And whether you think Shane Beamer is dumb or you think he's hokey or whatever, like when they get players on campus, they close them at a pretty high rate, like around 40 to 50% when they get them, especially with official visits. And they've done a really good job. Darren Usher, that entire staff, and they've done a really good job of getting more and more, not just players on campus throughout the spring, but elite players that they're in the mix for. And I think they're going to have one of their best classes they've had in a really long time. And I personally love where this team is at going into the season. Cause again, I'm big on the way that like the rosters have been constructed, and they have constructed this roster specifically just the way it's built on the defense, with what they have coming back in the linebacker position, the depth they have and the talent they have in the secondary, and then the depth they finally have again in the interior defensive line, as well as the edge rush positions. It's built way more similar to what we saw in 2024. The thing that should be really, really appealing to South Carolina fans that they should be able to get excited about is they have been able to figure out a way to get 4 really good players this year. Like, you kept Nick Harbor, you kept Lenora Sellers, you kept Dylan Stewart, you went out and got Jakarius Peak. Those are 4 guys that across the board, at least 3 of them have first round grades, depending on which mock drafts you look at. And all 4 of them could potentially have first round grades for all that said and done. Similar to what we talked about earlier with Texas and LSU, those guys are most likely going to be gone. And I would, from my own personal assumption and estimate, I would say you probably spent at least $3+ million on Sellers. I think you probably spent,
locked on cuts.
You probably put $2-2.5 million on Dylan Stewart. I'd say you probably spent over $1 million on Harbor. And then I think with Peak, like, he was the number 2 ranked left tackle in the portal. And we know that Jordan Seaton got at least $4 million. And I've heard upwards around $4.5 million. So like, if that all together, I would assume that Peak got no less than 2, right? I mean, like, that's if the guy ranked ahead of him got 4, I can't imagine him getting much less. So all in all, I think between those 4 players, you probably spent around $9 million in NIL money to have those 4 on your roster for this year. Most likely, all 4 of them will be gone after this season, which means now you are in a potential bidding war, whether it be in the portal or some of these high school players. And this is a talent-rich cycle in South Carolina and North Carolina, where they're going to be able to go compete with guys like Josh Dobson, who's a guy from North Carolina, a 5-star corner that is between, I think, A&M's a favorite right now. But they might not be in a spot where they're going to get outbid, because they're going to have $9 million more in cash that they're going to be able to go compete with in the portal and on the NIL trail, for recruiting trail. And I think it's a really big thing, because if you can foundationally have a really good season this year, now you have something to build on. And I think it could be a program changing and defining year in South Carolina if they are able to capitalize on all the new additions they brought in with the coaching staff and players, as well as what they have coming back. And it's a pivotal year for Beamer. So I think it's a really good setup for them, not just this year, but down the road as well.
Yeah, you made it sound like I don't like Beamer. How dare you? I'm a big fan of his.
No, I'm saying other people don't really like him.
Okay, Carolina Jack. I like this comment though. Doesn't matter how well he recruits. If he doesn't get tremendous improvement this season, his ass is gone. I think that's a fair statement.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, like, I think 4-8's unacceptable this year. I think anything under 7 games is unacceptable. The idea that they are going to only win 6 games is shocking to me. I think that them going over 6.5 is one of the locks in the preseason, for best bets and win totals. They're not losing to Towson. They're not losing to Kent State. I doubt they're going to lose to Mississippi State. I don't think they're losing to Kentucky because all those games are at home for one. And I think they're better than those teams. They should have beaten Alabama at least once, maybe twice in the last 2 years. And I don't know if Florida is going to be that great. And then you get Tennessee at home. But I think going into that Tennessee game, they're going to be 5-1. And that's a tough stretch at the end of the year to close with all them. But I think they're better than Clemson. I think they're better than Arkansas. So that's 7 wins right there. And I think they're going to upset somebody if they get at home. I just think they're going to be much better than they have been in the past in general. I think Kendall Briles is going to do wonders for the offense, and they're going to be much better than they were a season ago. And again, dude, the bar is low for some of the position, the offensive line position and the run game, the bar is set pretty low. I mean, these numbers right here it's atrocious that he had 13 touchdowns, 8 interceptions in that offense. So I think that going into this year, I think what was so incredible to watch with them in 2024 is that we know that Lenoir's can do it. Like, we saw it in 2024 and when they closed the year and how good they were they won 6 straight games, longest win streak in the SEC at that point, and 4 of them were against ranked opponents. And we've seen them do it before. Now you get the chance to start the season with that kind of momentum and then see what happens in the latter half of the year. And I think that's going to be a much more fun place to be in for South Carolina fans and for Shane Beamer this year.
Do you know, Chris, if Sellers, does he have over or under 1,000 rushing yards in his career?
I'm sure it's under. I think he had did he have over 500 2 years ago?
Yeah, it's under. It's I believe it's around 900. But I think, if it was more NFL stats where sacks didn't count against you, he'd probably have 1,500 rushing yards.
Maybe, yeah. But I feel like he had less than 200 last year.
Yeah. Well, according to that graphic I just threw, maybe I was way wrong. But I know I looked it up recently. He had 270 last year.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe how few rushing yards he had in his career.
And the attempts. I mean, that wasn't just because of the sack yards. They just refused that first fucking drive of the season against Vautech. I just was convinced. I was like, oh my God, they're everything I thought they were going to be. This is going to be the best year. This is going to be awesome. And it was like a 5-play, 75-yard drive. They did the same shit they usually do. It's like you go play action, you roll out and hit a tight end for 15 yards. Then it was capped off by a 15-yard run where he dragged a fucking safety into the end zone. I was like, this is going to be incredible. And then it's like they just stopped running him after that. It was, and everything went to shit. It was terrible. I don't think you're going to see that this year. I'm very high on them.
Hey, I want to say you did a great job. What was it, late last week? I saw or I heard you on Feinbaum's show with the guest host. But
yeah,
did you notice that you told a pretty funny joke and then literally you kept going for a solid 5 seconds? Then the guy started cackling, laughing. No.
What was the joke?
I can't recall, but it was. I think the delay was just so bad.
Yeah.
But I bring that up because
hold on. He made a point too, which was funny about this. He made a point at the end. He goes, I'm gonna have to spend the last 2 parts of my show having to apologize to Alabama fans for what you said. And I was like, okay, all right, yeah. That's usually what happens when I start talking.
But I was on the previous to that a day or two, and one of the talking points was Gunnar Stockton, and why he does not get respect as one of the top returning quarterbacks in college football. Do you have any idea? And do you
view why he doesn't?
Yeah, and do you,
because he's a white Republican?
And do you view Gunnar in that as one of the top returning quarterbacks?
Let me tell you something about my political views, real quick, Mike. No, I don't think that's what it is. I am making a joke because I know he was there for the President Trump thing. And that's just the joke. I don't have a feeling about his politics one way or the other. I think all of us should care less about other people's politics, and I hope you fucking clip that. Now, with Palestine, I do think... here's my thing about Minnesota and Palestine. I think with Gunner, it's like he's so underwhelming in the passing game because of what they ask him to do. And so I think he's a very capable quarterback and a very capable thrower. You saw it last year against Tennessee. I mean, the throw that he had on 4th and 6 against Tennessee in overtime, I think it was overtime, or maybe it was the fourth. It was the fourth quarter.
It was basically to force overtime.
Yeah. The stones you have to have to call that and then throw it it was incredible. I mean, like, now he wasn't the hero in the Bama game because they ran the ball all over Bama and then just stopped doing it every time they got inside the 10-yard line, which made no sense to me. So I think the thing with Gunnar Stockton is that what I get concerned about this year versus last year was I don't think he has the weapons at receiver this year versus last year. Like, Zachariah Branch is not coming back. Colby Young, I think, is gone, right? I know the kid they got from Georgia Tech. I don't know if he's as capable of an athlete and difference maker as that. Like, I don't know if there's another Zachariah Branch on this roster that's like that potentially big of a playmaker and can do so much in such little space and create, like, you know, like these mismatches and stuff like that. Now, I will say the tight end position, the shit they're going to be able to do there is going to be a lot similar to what they did in 2022 and 2023. They got some freaks at the tight end position. And that Ulysses, whatever his name is, I think Kiffin said it was Ulysses S. Grant. No, I'm kidding. The number 10, Williams, the kid who's like 6'8" and a freak of nature. I think that kid's going to be really, really good. And they got some other guys there. But they're just not going to ever ask him to do anything. And the thing that's always going to contribute to the narrative with players like this at Georgia is – Kirby doesn't give a shit. And I think that Gunnar Stockton doesn't give a shit either. I think Carson Beck probably did. I think Carson Beck probably gave a shit that they weren't going out there and letting him rip it 40 times a game if he wanted to. And Stetson never really cared about that. It was just like, hey, like, let's go figure out ways to win. And what Kirby, when he's at his best and his teams are at his best and he knows what he has, like, as a whole, as a team, what happened? Oh, no.
No, just Brodo says, did you get a new camera? Looks good. And then Liquid says, everybody looks good.
Thanks, Liquid. I look pretty good today. So I think that the idea of what they like we saw this a couple of years ago where it's like they didn't have a bunch of early games in that season where they had to really show anything. I don't know what the schedule is necessarily this year because I think that, like, I'm sure you'll bring it up, but I'm sure it's be more difficult. Like, I don't think they're gonna have to show much in 4 of their first 5 games. I'm thinking before November, you're going to be tested against Bama and Oklahoma, and I think they're going to win both those games. But what we see with Kirby and what we've seen from his OCs in years past, it's like you don't have to show that much to beat these teams, so why would you? And in a year now where you have 9 conference games and everyone's watching more tape, and then you got to go to an SEC championship because by the way, they've played in it like 8 of the last 9 fucking years. And then after that, you got to play in probably 3 playoff games if you're going to win the national title. Why would you put more on tape if you don't have to? So, you know, that and the 40% of his passes being at or behind the line of scrimmage, that probably contributes to it. But I think Gunnar Stockton's a great quarterback. And he's a – I don't think he's going to be an NFL first rounder, no. But I think he's a really, really good college quarterback that's on a really good team. And here's the thing. He makes the people around him better. Not whereas you see some quarterbacks that are good college quarterbacks, but are probably made, they probably look better because of the talent they have around them. He makes everyone around him better and that team better.
Yeah. And we've gone this far. I totally whiffed. I should have asked you this a little bit sooner, but we kind of went on a tangent there with Kiffin.
No, that doesn't sound like me.
The the tragedy, I guess you want to call it, or near tragedy, Ahmad Hardy getting shot. I mean, how crazy is that? And I don't have any updates on his availability. I don't think anybody does at this point in time. But, man, you hate to see that for perhaps the premier running back in the country.
Yeah, seamless transition. I'm glad we got to bring this up. I don't I I didn't know the severity of it. I saw that he got shot.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I saw that it was like, he's in stable condition, he's fine. I hate to say it. My assumption was just like, oh, he's fine. Like, and then I saw that like the expectations is that he will play football again. So I don't know where he was shot or what happened, but that is
in the leg.
Ugh, that's just awful, man. It's just awful. And so
I thought, you know, you'd be a perfect person. You, as you led the show with, you've been shot.
I have been shot. I went to work 2 days later. I mean, yeah, I think I took one day off and then I was like a double on Thursday and I went in there with my arm bandage and just worked. But it was also, I got shot in the arm and it was like, I was just doing this with, that's not good. Don't clip that. But I was making martinis as I was bartending.
You were actually at the bar when that happened?
No, I was running. That's why I don't jog anymore. I was jogging in broad daylight at like 6:45 PM. And it was funny cause I was listening to this song by Waka Flocka and Machine Gun Kelly. And at the exact moment of the song, I'm on Ponce de Leon Avenue in downtown Atlanta. And the part of the song, he goes, I'm so motherfucking violent. And I was like, yeah, that's me. And then I heard like pop, pop. And then felt like the back of my arm. And I was like, oh, there's a hole. And I was like, I wonder if someone shot me with a slingshot. First thought. And then my next thought was like, no, man, you're 30. So people aren't fucking playing with slingshots out here. So, and yeah, it was a 22 bullet that was shot in my arm. But yeah, the Ahmad Hardy thing, all jokes aside, it's senseless shit like that makes me so mad because it's just, there's it's so preventable. And I'm not saying on his part, I don't know where he was at or if it was like a bad place. I do know that like feels pretty strong that Ahmad Hardy wasn't doing anything that warranted him getting shot. And so that is really frustrating that something like that would happen. David Chambers, shout out bitch.
David Chambers. Great show, Mike. Sorry about ragging on that loser. You
such an aggressive. Save your money and go to therapy. Save your money and go to therapy.
Hey, God, shout out to Droll Panther says you've got street cred.
It's me. 22 is a step up from a BB gun. We got shot with those all the time. All right, well, then you go out and jog and get shot and see how it makes you feel, brother. Like, I mean, like...
His brother sponsored by Tampax because he should be.
All right, well, that's we've come to the end of the show. But
anything before we wrap it up?
No. I was going to make a really bad joke, but I'll make it off air. No, I think a lot going on. We're like 2 months out from Media Days, which is good.
Yeah.
That'll be fun. And that's about it, dude.
All right. Well, hey, man, we appreciate it as always. You were, I thought, less rambly than usual.
Came in way more rambly.
Well, I was trying to be kind. But we appreciate the shot stories and everything. So, hey, before you go, tell the cousins how to follow you and how to find all your work.
Yeah, I'll be at your mom's house tonight, David Chambers. And then tomorrow we'll be back, Locked On Cox. And then tomorrow morning... I'll give you the whole rundown. We'll be on SiriusXM with Rick Neuheisel and his co-host, which I forgot. Wednesdays at 9:30 Central, and then Locked On Gamecocks, and then read all my stuff over at LouisianaSports.net. That's about it.
Look at Locked On Cox jogging. That's great. All right, we'll see you tonight with Cousin Shane. Bye-bye.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.